Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! Well, welcome along once again to Tech Talk. Yes, this is the show that, like Facebook, is free forever. But unlike Facebook, won't steal your soul. Hi, I'm Stephen Scott. We've also got Sean Preece with us. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Stephen Scott. That was so controversial. I'm shocked.
Well, it gets you listening. It gets the lawyers listening early. I think that's important in this program. Tim Schwartz is also here. Morning, Tim. Evening, Tim. Good day, Tim.
Good day to you, Stephen, and good day to you, Sean. How you guys doing?
Honestly, I have no idea what time it is when I'm with you guys because, you know, we do this show and everyone's at such different points on the scale. I just get so mixed up. So, yes, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good day is how we shall start every show from now on. So here we are once again. Yes, we're here talking tech and we are going to talk a little bit about Apple again. Sorry, Android fans, but we will come back to you. Very soon, because Riz will be coming back soon with more, hopefully answering more of your questions, should you send them in. So we'll get to that. Also, we're going to be talking, as I say, about Apple this week. We are going to be talking about the Apple Watch in particular, because we got a lovely email in, guys, from Henry, who asked us what we thought about the Apple Watch as an accessible device. Good question, I guess.
Yeah, and it's a question that... some people don't like asking, I want to know from the start, tell me about the Apple Watch, I don't know about it, and it's a good question to ask.
So that's coming up, and we'll keep an eye on the news as well, lots of news actually in the last week, and you'll be pleased to hear it's not Apple related, or is it? And your emails, yes, all that coming up, thank you so much for all your emails, tons of them coming in, our inbox is heaving. So we shall get some of that cleared up today and answer hopefully some of your queries and questions and also get some of your tips as well. That's all to come. So yes, welcome along to the show. Listen guys, I've got a rant before we start. I'm sorry, okay, but I've got to say something.
Oh, well, it depends what it is. Can you tell us off mic first, and then we'll say if it's okay.
Yeah, really. No, because I want everybody to hear.
Okay. This message has not been approved by Tim or Sean or RNIB for that matter. Go ahead, Stephen.
I don't care. Listen, here's the deal. Let them fire me. This is my thing, right? I am really annoyed at my iPad Pro. Really annoyed at it. iPad Pro? Question mark. What is Pro about this thing? I couldn't open a Word document today. I mean, if this thing wants to take itself seriously, it has to be able to open Word documents, at least, at the very least.
Now, I don't want to make this point, but I need to. Is it the Apple Pro's fault, or is it user error?
No, it's definitely its fault.
Why? Well, now, come on, a Word document, that's the most generic document ever. That's got to be universal. It must have opened it in something.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I was trying to do, right? So we've got the emails here for the show, and Chris, as you know, is off having a child. I mean, frankly, I think
it's
very selfish, disgraceful, in fact, because that means we don't have anyone to read our emails. So I've decided to take on the mantle. My eyes shall suffer for the programme. Yeah, because I think I'm the one with the most working eyes.
Yeah, Bagsy, not me. I can't do it.
No.
And definitely not me.
You know, I mean, Jaws, you're just liars. You could do it. You just don't want to do it. Yes. I'm left to do it. So, basically, I've got the emails here. I've got a Word document with all the emails that I've copied over from the emails to it. So it's a nice big list. And I've got this app here, which was actually recommended to me by Corey Brown, who's coming up shortly. And we'll meet her in a second. But the app that was suggested to me is called Teleprompter Pro. And essentially, it's an app that lets you read very large text, and it kind of scrolls it for you. You can have it run itself. It can run and read the text. It can even, and this is quite impressive, it can even listen to your voice, and it recognizes the words you're saying and rolls the script for you, which is incredible, actually, when you think about it.
Wow, it's like a karaoke machine.
Yeah, I was going to do that, but it cost like 99 pence, and I'm not made of money. So that's not happening yet. But yeah, anyway, so I've got my document, I've got the app. You'd think I'd just be able to open it straight in. Can't do it. I had to go into Microsoft Word, open the document, copy all the text, take it to the other app, paste it all in. Oh, ridiculous.
You see, that's why tablets aren't the same as laptops and desktop computers. There is that disconnect. It's not quite there yet. I don't care what Apple say. It's not a replacement for a laptop.
No, I mean, I know, Tim, you haven't really bothered with iPads for fairly obvious reasons, I suppose. But, you know, as a working machine, how have you found the iPhone? I mean, have you used it at work at all for that kind of purpose?
I have used my iPhone for, you know, personal and some professional use, and I find that I can do most anything I want, especially if I get my hands on my Bluetooth keyboard and have that paired. There's very little that I can't do on my iPhone, and that would be the same. Yeah, Stephen. I presume that would be the same on an iPad, but again, I don't really have a lot of experience with an iPad. I've used them, but I'm not using one right now. But my question with this would be, is it more the iPad's abilities, or is it this teleprompter app's issue? Because if it doesn't allow the import of a doc or docs file, that could be an issue. So I don't know what files it allows you to load. It may only allow text. That could be more the app than it could be the iPad.
Yeah, well, that's it. But I will say this. I think there's a big difference between the iPad and the iPhone in the sense that if I got, and I do have, I bought the Apple iPad Pro keyboard, the smart keyboard to go with this iPad. And whilst it's fine and it's fairly usable, you still need to be able to interact with the screen, I think, in order for the whole thing to work. And that's because what they've done with the iPad as opposed to the iPhone is they've got the column where, say, for example, it's your emails, right? You've got your email list. Now, on an iPhone, it's just one big list. You would double tap it to go into the actual email itself. And then you would read the email. And you can do all that with a keyboard. You don't even need to touch the phone for that, which is brilliant. But on an iPad, it's got the column exactly the same, the column of emails, but on the right-hand side of the screen, taking up about 3/4 of the screen, the message appears there. And that means there's a lot more navigation required. A bit more like the Mac itself, but not quite as intuitive, I don't think. Certainly not with the keyboard. Maybe it's just me, but I'd love to hear from other people who might be having experiences with the iPad and a keyboard, because I'd much rather use it that way than with a touchscreen. And of course, the answer most given is usually, well, buy a MacBook. You don't have the iPad, yes. And that might be the answer. That may well be the answer. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that all day, but I just wanted to mention it. Get off my chest. I feel better now. Thank you, guys.
Good. That's what we're here for, Stephen, to help.
Yep, we're always here for your therapy needs.
We just tune out and don't listen.
You're not alone. Right. Listen, I'm married. I get it. Let's move on. I think now, guys, it's time for a bit of Corey. Oh, not that one.
Oh, I was getting into that then. I love it.
No, not that show. No, I'm not talking about Corey Nation Street. I'm talking about Corey Brown, the Channel 4 announcer.
Deal or no deal in 50 minutes. First on 4, a weatherman and a nuclear physicist. Will there be more than a whisker between them? Here's Countdown. Lots of new stuff tonight on 4. The boss of a UK-wide pizza delivery business goes undercover in half an hour. After chilli and chocolate, jerk chicken, in fact, more feel-good food than you can shake a fish on a stick at. Jamie is here next.
Corey Brown, Channel 4 announcer. Are you happy for me to say that? I guess you are.
If you'd like to,
I would, because I think most people will probably know your voice. So anyway, hello, Corey Brown.
Hello, Stephen Scott.
I love when she says that in that announcer voice. Now, when you're not announcing TV programmes for us all, you are a huge tech fan, I believe.
Oh, yes. Yes. Spotty tech fan, yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Early adopter, wasting my money on lots of stuff that, you know, won't go anywhere. I've still got a mini disc player and, lots of other obsolete things. But yes, no, I do. I love my tech.
Mini disc. Oh, that takes me back.
Oh, she's a real nerd.
Yeah. Portable. I've got a portable mini disc player that you could record on.
I loved those, yeah.
It's really nice.
I used
to
use them for interviews. I loved all that stuff.
Yeah, they were. That's exactly what I used to use them for as well.
Well, the reason we brought you on was not to talk about the knee discs.
I was going to leave the room then, leave you two to it.
This is Tech Talk 1980. But no, I thought that we'd talk about the Apple Watch. And the reason I brought this up this week, guys, is because Henry got in touch with us. Hi, Henry. He got in touch with us to say that he is thinking about getting an Apple Watch, but he wants to know how accessible it is. And I think this is a great question because we talk so much about technology here on the show. And I know, Corey, you listen every week and you hear us rabbit on about this stuff. But it's very easy for us to forget that people out there, some people just don't know what is available to them as blind people. And I think it's really good to bring this up. So I know you did a review for us on the Apple Watch Series 2 a little while ago. But you still have the Apple Watch Series 2. You didn't upgrade to the Series 3.
No, I thought, right, well, the Series 2 does all the things I need it to do. I know the Series 3, possibly with having Siri actually talking to you, has a good function in that respect. But I thought, well, no, I hadn't long changed to the Series 2 from a Series 1. And I thought, oh, it gets a bit ridiculous, doesn't it? I have to be slightly restrained, so I'll wait till the Series 4 comes out, and I'm definitely having that when it does.
I'm having that
because I'm sure there'll be some good changes, I think, on the next gen. So I shall eagerly await September, which is probably when they'll tell us more about it, I'd imagine. But
yes, well, I know someone with us here who is in exactly the same position as you, although he hasn't reached into his pockets in Series 1, Tim Schwartz.
This is very true. I got in on Series 1 and am eagerly awaiting, just like Corey is, for the Series 4. I think it's going to be everything that I want it to be. But yeah, I had a hard time going from Series 1 to Series 2. It offered things I wanted, but not enough. Series 3 was close, but yeah, I'm definitely ready for the next one.
I think the thing that won the Series 2 for me was it being waterproof, because I swim quite a lot, and just being able to wear your watch in the pool to log your swims, but even just to know what the time is was really quite a revelation. But then actually, you know what, wearing a watch was quite a revelation for me, because I'd got to a point in time where I'd convinced myself I didn't need to wear a watch, because I always had my phone with me and therefore I didn't need a watch. And because it was always really difficult to find a watch that I actually liked and could read, you know, I had visions of having this, you know, really lovely watch on my arm and asking what the time was. Yeah, I don't really know.
I've had that a couple of times where you're wearing a watch and someone says, can you tell me the time? So, no, but you can have a look.
Yeah. I've always said to my husband, the day he buys me either a watch or a pen, this was before the Apple Watch came out, because obviously if he'd like to buy me a Series 4, I'd be perfectly happy with that. If he bought me a watch or a pen, we were done.
Yeah. That was it. It was over.
That was it, yeah.
I think that's fair anyway, irrespective of sight loss. Now, in regards to that, you don't use VoiceOver. Can you see the screen?
I do use VoiceOver. I do use VoiceOver. I use it a lot. I've got it turned on now. I tell you, one reason I really like leaving VoiceOver turned on is because then you have access to the haptic time. So you can just tap. If you're in a meeting and you can just literally tap it under the table and know what the time is without even having to glance at a watch, which I kind of quite like. The issue with VoiceOver is being able to hear it all the time, because it's finding that sort of level where it's not too loud that everybody else can hear it, but it's loud enough that you can hear it. Obviously, headphones are an option. EarPods I put into kind of slight brackets about, because they don't always connect very well and they will always be stolen by your iPhone first. So unless your iPhone is kind of out of range, then they work really well. So if they connect automatically to the watch, then they're brilliant. But if they don't, then you have more of a faff than it's really worth. I think there are plenty of other Bluetooth devices that will handle two connections simultaneously really happily. You know, if you've got Bose anything, they're perfectly fine. Or I've got even a little Jabra earpiece. I don't carry it around with me all the time anymore. But if there were moments where I know I needed to connect to my phone and to my watch, I'd probably resort to something like that. But I think primarily when I'm out and about, I have VoiceOver on more because of the haptic time, and also because if you are somewhere where you can, you know, use it that way, than I do. But I also, you can zoom on it and move around the screen that way. So yeah, more often than not, it's turned on rather than off, but not loudly. And also, interestingly, I changed the default person, you had to change the region. I think mine's set to Australia.
Oh.
Because that then gives you a female voice.
Karen.
Is it?
Yes, it is, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Does that sound creepy that I know that off the top of my head?
It's only slightly strange.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, because actually I think it's easier to hear female voices when you're out and about. So when it's a bit louder, they kind of cut through a bit more easily. So I changed her to be Australian. So I've got an Australian voice coming out of my
watch.
I did
not know you could do that.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow. Right, let's get back to basics a bit here, because I'm thinking about Henry, and, you know, his question relates to, you know, how all this works. So what can you do on this watch with voiceover? I mean, is it everything you can do? Now, I know a lot of the answers to this, but I'm asking you guys because, first of all, Corey, you certainly seem to know more about it than I do. I've got the Series 3, by the way, but I just buy it for show. And... Tim, I know you've got the Series 1 there, but, you know, I'm just intrigued from both of your points of view because, you know, I say this to my wife often, you know, I don't know everything. So I like to, you know, ask others.
Okay, well, I would say, in my experience, actually, anything that works on the Apple Watch typically is quite accessible, largely because it's a little bit more limited in screen and that kind of thing. So most apps seem to be quite text-based, so you don't encounter bits that it can't read. I use it all the time for activity tracking. Diligently close my 3 rings every day. That all reports really well for swimming, as I've already said, so for those kind of things. What else do I do? Check my email. There's the Just Press Record. It's a great recording app. Works really well with it. You can control tune in or radio player with it. So if I'm in the shower, you can just, you know, turn on Radio 2 and do that before you get in.
Other radio stations.
Other radio stations are available, of course. Yes, it's revealing far too much about myself, isn't it? And what I do in my downtime.
Well, you're visually impaired. You should have said Radio 4, but we'll not go
should
there.
Should I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Did you not know that? All blind people get their white cane, they get their talking clock, and a lifetime subscription to Radio 4 when you go blind.
I love it.
Well, clearly I've bucked a trend there.
Look, that's something I wanted to say is I do feel like the nerdy kid in the corner with all you cool kids and your Apple Watches, because I don't have one. I got an iPad, but it was so similar to my iPhone, I didn't use it. And I've got the same sort of fear for the Apple Watch. Now, if there was one thing that you would say, this is the reason I keep the Apple Watch, what would that be from each of you?
For me, it'd be the fitness stuff, without any doubt at all. I my husband has a Fitbit. I use the Apple Watch, and it's just brilliant. You know, you've got your little 3 rings that you close every day, and I've probably lost weight over the time I've had them because I do walk further. I don't catch the bus where I would have previously caught the bus because I really want
to make
sure those steps are in. And so actually, as a fitness device, never mind how accessible it is, as a fitness device, it's brilliant. You know, the fact I can wear it in the swimming pool and it tracks everything and it all goes into Apple Health. So that for me would be the probably, if I had to put them in an order, that would be my big number one thing.
Yeah, if I had to just pick one thing, I think Corey's absolutely right. The fitness and health tracking ability of the Apple Watch is really, really good. That being said, I think it's all the above because its simplicity, like Corey was talking about before, because most Apple Watch apps are very simple and text-based, you're going to be hard pressed to find an Apple Watch app that isn't accessible to you know, most, you know, in most cases or to a certain extent. And so to be able to control music on my phone from the watch without pulling the phone out, to be able to check notifications and quickly respond or, you know, just push them away or to see what's going on or to respond to a message, all of that done without having to worry about pulling out my phone and unlocking my phone and getting in and taking care of all that. It actually sounds simple, but it is really nice to be able to use all of those features without having to pull your phone out every single time. And,
yeah,
you know, in addition, like I said, just being able to, you know, do quick recordings on the fly or, you know, to do the health and fitness, you know, stuff, you know, especially is so nice. So yeah, there's so many different things and it is a personal use case kind of thing. Everybody's going to find that one thing that's special to them, but I really do find myself using it more and more for all the different things, not just the fitness.
Maybe I'm the one that's the odd one out here then, because I do find I don't use my watch at all properly, I don't think. I mean, I use it for the time, and I get lots of notifications on it, obviously. And, yeah, it's useful. But I think I have that problem with the volume thing. I need to sort this out, because the volume for me drives me insane. It is either too loud, where everyone hears it, or too quiet, that I can't hear it. And, you know, it's fine in one environment where, you know, maybe you're in an office and you've got the level just right, or you're at home and it doesn't matter. But you're in a busy train station or you're on a plane and you cannot hear this thing, and you just think, oh, forget it. You know, it just drives me insane. So there are little things that I think maybe I don't know enough about it. I mean, like, for example, how do you turn the volume up on it? Because I don't know how you do that. I know you can go into settings and do it, but isn't there just a simple way?
Yeah, there is if you double tap and move your fingers upwards on the screen. It doesn't seem to work so well if you've got Zoom turned on as well, but if you've only got VoiceOver turned on, that works absolutely fine. That's right, isn't it, Tim?
And I believe it's a two-finger double tap and hold.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, two fingers, and you hold them and slide them up like a volume.
Up and down.
Wow.
And it's quite responsive that way. But with Zoom turned on, that tends to not work quite as well. But no, that works fine.
This is an education today.
How long have you had the Apple Watch there, Stephen?
I buy this stuff, and you know, I think, but I have to say, I don't think I'm alone in this. I think there's a lot of people out there who buy this kind of stuff. And I was saying this, was it last week or the week before? I've been saying it probably so many times that I don't even know when I said it. But you don't get instruction manuals anymore, so you really don't know about all these features. And especially when it comes to accessibility, where there are additional gestures and things you can do to make your experience better, you just don't get that manual. You have to often go and seek out this information. That's a problem, isn't it, Corey? That it's the, for some people, there just isn't the availability of resources to go and learn about all this stuff.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't come with something out of the box. I think I've probably learnt a lot of what I've learnt piecemeal. So reading a bit on somebody's, you know, blog or something that they've put onto Twitter, and or you go to Apple, and then they, I think Apple do have some information on accessibility gestures. I say that with a big caveat, but I think there's stuff on the Apple website that's very specific. But I think, you know, there are just a couple of people who are, you know, the Apple Viz type experts, and you follow their stuff, and they generally are releasing information before these projects are even out. So you kind of know what you're going to do with it before you've got it, is what I've found.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It is very much, you've got to find and piecemeal it together, like you said. It is,
yeah.
Whereas you would, just one resource from Apple would be great. I think you're right. I think there is something on their website, but it's a case of just finding it. It should be so easy.
Yeah,
and you've got to read it, and then you've got to take it in.
Well, you know, it's quite interesting hearing a man saying that he really wants an instruction manual, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. Goes against the grain just a bit, doesn't it?
But I mean, so much of a lot of this is, I mean, genuinely, it is quite intuitive. And, you know, all the gestures that you would do, you know, swiping left and swiping right, they all work. And there's a, you know, the screen's quite small, so it only goes to two finger swipes to move between the watch faces. And, the, you know, the iOS has got better over time as well, because it used to be you couldn't move between the different watch faces without having to sort of press, hard press down and go through in a slightly different way than you would if VoiceOver wasn't turned on. So I think a lot of it, you know, I don't think, if somebody's an Apple user anyway, I don't think you'd end up with an Apple Watch and not have a sense of how to at least get started with it. And then Google's brilliant. If you want to know how to turn up the volume on your Apple Watch, you just say, you know, Google, how do I turn the volume up on an Apple Watch with VoiceOver running? And you can guarantee the first three things will come up and tell
you.
Stephen.
Yeah, all right.
Google it. Take it out of the drawer. Yeah. Every IT specialist's favourite line. Google it.
Switch it off, switch it on again. Now, it might sound like a daft question to Apple Watch users, especially those who use them every day for swimming or for, as you say, going in the shower or whatever you might use it or wear it at least. But one of the things that Henry brought up that I think is really interesting is that the speaker, of course, inside the watch is very important to us, because that's how we see what's going on. Does any water impact the speaker?
So basically, when you start a swimming workout off, it locks the phone, so it puts a water lock, locks the watch, so it puts a water lock on. You can also do that manually. So if you get in the shower or the bath and you want to stick your arms right under the water, you can turn the water lock on manually. And basically, at that point, the only thing that you can do is tap the screen to see the time. You can use the normal tap gestures, 3 or 4 taps to get the haptic time. So that still works. But to access any other feature on the phone, what you do is you turn the digital crown for about 3 seconds and the phone makes a few noises and it spits any water that it's got out of the side speaker. And then you can access the full functionality of the phone again. And to be honest, I mean, I'm in the pool and I'll turn the water lock off and you'll fiddle with your watch and look at, you know, what your workout stats are. I wouldn't worry for a second if the watch got wet at that point in time. I think it's more about if you've got the water lock on and you're really swimming hard, you know, it kind of obviously does something inside. The speaker itself, sometimes I do find after I've done a long swim, the audio quality is different for a while. It sort of sounds like there's still probably something in there and it does take it a little while to kind of dry out properly and everything to sound completely normal again. But I don't think I can say more than that.
Even with my Series 1, of course, I don't have the water lock feature on Series 1 that came in 2. However, when I have used it in water where I've been in a pool or gone swimming or what have you, it hasn't been too bad. It does still operate just fine when it gets wet. And as Corey said, if a little bit of water does get into the speaker, it does react a little differently for a while it dries out. Even on Series 1 where I can't have it vibrate and spit the water out, it still works and still operates fine. You just don't hear the speaker as well. So that is something to consider if you are definitely using it for, well, you know, with voiceover. You want to consider that if that speaker does get wet, it may impact it for a little bit of time until it dries. Although there are cases you can buy and wristbands that you can buy that will protect that speaker. I have actually purchased one that wasn't actually all that expensive that protects everything on the watch and makes it fully waterproof no matter which version you've got. So that's something else you can do as well.
Well, going back to Henry's question there, Apple accessibility, just the fact there that you've got the haptic feedback available to tell you the time, which for anyone that doesn't know, it will tell you the time through a series of vibrations. Sounds strange, but it works really well from what I hear. But the fact that that's available and Apple have thought about that just shows their commitment to accessibility. I don't want to sound like an Apple fanboy, but you know, when you talk about Apple and accessibility, it does really shine through how much work they put into it. And you sort of come to expect it from Apple. So for Henry's point of view, it does sound really accessible.
Absolutely. I'd echo all of that. And I don't think there's anything wrong in being an Apple fanboy or fangirl. Frankly, I think they are so ahead of the curve that they are just... They're on another level.
Yeah.
They are.
And to that point, Sean, if someone is an Apple user, like Corey was alluding to before, if you're familiar with gestures on your iPhone or your iPad, you're probably already going to know, what would you say, 80%, 85% of the gestures on an Apple Watch. Like Corey was saying before, you know, there's a 2-finger swipe left and right to go between clock faces. And we talked about the volume control. So there are those slightly different things that you can do on the Apple Watch that you need to know to make it work, you know, more efficiently. But for the most part, as long as you know basic gestures, you're going to feel right at home on an Apple Watch because Apple took the time to make sure that it was accessible and made that actually work out just fine with voiceover.
By the way, as you've been talking, Tim, I have been listening to you intently, but I've just been trying this feature out, and it's incredible. So a double tap, 2 fingers, double tap. Oh, typical. Live demos never work. Listen, it didn't work for Steve Jobs. It won't work for me. Right, so double tap, 2 fingers, and then...
80,
90,
100, 100%. How good is that? Works really well. Right, I just want to mention some of the other features. It does have Zoom on it, which I don't really understand how this benefits anybody unless, you know, they doubled the size of the screen. But Zoom is on there, so that means if you can see the screen a little bit, you could use Zoom. Doesn't really work for us, I don't think. But, you know, it might be useful to you. If you have issues with colour, as I do, although not to this level, you can turn grayscale on, so it'll make everything grayscale. Bold text, and you can increase the size of the text as well. So if you can see the screen, or even if you think, I can see it a little bit, if it was just a bit bigger, you can increase the text size, which is brilliant, and you can bolden that text as well. You can also, if you have issues with motion, you can reduce the motion, turn that on, reduce transparency. And if you have issues with hearing, you can also turn on mono audio as well, or change the left and right slider so you can change the audio to come out of whatever speaker you prefer, especially if you're using a hearing aid. So, you know, lots of accessibility, and that's built into our watch. I mean, it's incredible.
It is.
And you're right, Corey, you know, Apple are just on this, you know, and it's absolutely brilliant. I'm so glad you came on to talk about it today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Corey.
Thank you, Corey.
Right, time for this.
News from the internet.
And have we got tons of news. It's so much news. I mean, you know, you'd think since WWDC it calmed down, but every time I turn around, there's more news. And the most exciting story that I found, and it kind of just popped up in my Twitter feed, and I thought, ooh, I like that one. And it wasn't, thankfully, one relating to food for a change. It was a story, although I do have a food story later, but it was a story... just for you, Sean. All about Sonos. Sonos have announced... just sort of randomly dropped an announcement, as they tend to do, that company, that they're dropping out a new soundbar. Now, this one is called the Sonos Beam. And I've got to say, I think, and I'm not alone in this, but I think this is the HomePod killer.
Possible.
Well, I, you know, having known and having heard Sonos, because I've got it at home, I know how good Sonos sound is. This soundbar is a little bit smaller than the Playbar. The Playbar you might have seen, I think it retails about £699.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very expensive, might be £599 actually these days, but it's an expensive soundbar, however you look at it. And the sound of it is incredible. But this one's a bit smaller. Some are saying it's better for smaller rooms, which might actually appeal to more people as a result, mm-hmm. you know, because not everybody has a cinema in their house. Yeah, so I'm not going to go into that. But yeah, so not everybody does, so that's fair. But this one's a little bit smaller, and the features that are in it are incredible. You've got AirPlay 2 in there, and hence why we're calling it the HomePod killer, because the HomePod, of course, has got AirPlay now, which has just come out, although bizarrely Apple has allowed Sonos to also have this in their products. And Sonos will have this, but also it will have Lady A... and Google's assistant in there as well, although not yet, not at launch, but when it's, but you know, there will be an upgrade in time, and then that will allow us to have Google Assistant as well. What do we think about this one, guys? This sounds rather interesting. Oh, and I'll tell you the price first as well. $399. That's dollars. That's the US price. I'm imagining that will translate to the same in UK.
Yes, as it always does. Directly, always does. Just change that dollar sign for a pound sign. Yeah. Well, look, Sonos, so it's great audio quality, we assume, because, you know, that Sonos thing, great audio quality. And, yeah, I'm loving these, you choose what assistant you want on it. You know, that's got to be the way to go. I'm so sick of being locked into an ecosystem. Make your choice, put your money down, but you got to stick with that. It's so annoying. So anything where you get a choice like this, fantastic.
Yeah, and Sonos was like this for a long time.
What, you mean locked in? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's nice that Sonos is finally giving you a choice here, and I think it's extraordinarily smart on their point, as just as a business, to say, you know what, we're going to give you the quality of sound speaker that you're used to from a Sonos. Oh, and by the way, no matter which ecosystem you're locked into, we're going to offer you, in essence, all three. I mean, it's not like Siri is built in, but like you said, Stephen, with AirPlay 2, well, then you can use it with iPhone, iPad, even Apple TV now. So that allows you to stream to this with any iDevice, and having Amazon and Google involved as well. This is just smart business on their part to say, you know what, no matter whether you've got one of these yet or not, or if you're already locked into one, we're going to offer you all of them and allow you to use it. So yeah, this is very smart.
I like this story. I want to talk more about it, but of course we have got a ton of emails to get through, so I want to rattle through some other news stories as well, because there's so much to talk about. The other big TV announcement this week was Amazon just dropping the news in America first of a new Fire TV option. Of course, you can get the Fire TV stick. You can get the Fire TV 4K, which is not a stick, but it's kind of a dongle, I think. That's the 4K one, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's, they've added one more to that range, and it's called the Fire TV Cube. Now, this seems to be more where Amazon want to go, and that is to create something that's at the hub of the home. So it's essentially a square Echo, in a cube form, hence why I said square. I realised that after I said it, that I think people probably got it from the word cube. But yeah, so it's a cube-shaped thing, and it's very small, and it will sit in front of your TV, and it is literally intended to sit in front of your TV because it has got the capabilities to control your television through infrared as well. So not only can you choose what you want to watch through it, through voice, you can also change your channel by voice. Now, this becomes interesting for us because no remote controls are required here. This doesn't come with a remote control because it doesn't need one. Everything you do on it depends on your voice. So you speak to it and say, change it to BBC One or ITV or Channel 4. You can even apparently, in America, and this is where it's being sold on in America, you can control satellite boxes, cable boxes, TVs, soundbars. Everything would be linked through this one thing. And I think this is the way I would like to see this go. The only option I've seen is the Logitech Harmony, which does something similar to this and is fairly accessible, works with Lady A. I think this could be interesting.
I think this could be really interesting because the Harmony, as you pointed out, it's nice, it's accessible, but it's a bit expensive. Amazon Cube, though, this honestly is what I was hoping the Apple TV, I think it was the fourth generation when they incorporated Siri into the remote, I was hoping that would be this, that you would be talking to Siri more hands-free to the Apple TV and can control the Apple TV with it. You can do that, but you have to do it through the remote, of course, and hit the button. Having it be totally hands-free and not just controlling certain apps or certain functions, but be able to control all the other devices like you talked about, this is really appealing. This is actually appealing, I think, to non-techs as well. My wife actually read an article about it and brought it up to me after the three of us had talked about it, when we sent the story back and forth. And she said, this is interesting. Why do I want this instead of the Apple TV, Tim? And I had to go and look and say, well, you know, let's compare the two, because I think that's the market they're going for, is that Apple TV market, and saying, well, fine, we'll do it, but we'll just do it without a button, hands-free, and, oh, it'll control all these things too. This could be a really good push for Amazon to do this.
Let me just say, the Harmony Hub, sort of accessible. Setting it up is an accessibility nightmare, to be honest, but you can get through it. But it works okay. I'm in two minds on this. I wish they would put IR blasters in an Echo Dot or an Echo and allow you to control devices through that. The Amazon Fire TV stick side of things, I really don't think I can recommend it anymore. The accessibility side of it, voice view is good, but the third-party app support just isn't there. The audio description isn't maturing as fast as I'd like it to. I'm not sure about that side of it. But controlling your TV, changing channel, just using your voice, just using the Lady A, good move.
Okay. Well, guys, we've got so much news to get through. Should we maybe do an extra today, and we'll stick it up on the podcast for people to listen to with a few extra stories, because there are just so much to get through. We're all up for that?
Okay, no problem.
Sounds good.
Right, okay, we'll do that at the end of the show. We will, if you're listening on the podcast, you can get the next episode and that will have the extra on it. And if you're listening on air, then check out the podcast. You'll find it where you get all podcasts. Wherever you got the last one, you'll find us there. And if you've never found us before, I don't know how you're listening to us. Right, let's move on. Here's some emails.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yes, let's get into the emails then. Hi to Rebecca, who says, and wants to follow up on WWDC from last week. She says, I wanted to see the keynote live, but didn't get a chance to. No commitment, Rebecca, honestly. It's disgraceful. To me, the best part about the new features is the fact that older iPhones can get a performance boost. I have an iPhone SE, and I'm glad Apple is recognising this investment. The Siri features sound intriguing, but I'd rather see more improvements in how the AI operates. I was excited about Apple and Spectrum and the Apple TV. This is, of course, the US provider that's working with the Apple TV. And what Rebecca's talking about is the zero sign-on function, which lets you basically connect your box to your cable provider in the States, and it will just automatically sign you into everything. That's brilliant. But, she says, I heard about the problems some US customers were having with getting audio description. This problem again.
That's the big drawback, isn't it, with any on-demand service?
She says, while I do like the idea of customizing Do Not Disturb, I am disappointed with Apple for focusing on emojis. Oh, music to my ears. How does this help their education market, and wouldn't this prove to be a distraction? Why spend so much time creating apps and settings to limit app usage when adults can simply request more time or just ignore the settings altogether. I understand the necessity of parental control, but isn't it better to teach kids how to select appropriate content and protect themselves?
Correct.
I totally, actually, do you know, I do agree with that.
Absolutely.
I never thought of it that way, actually, but you know, they're right. Rebecca's right here. You know, actually putting all these emojis and animojis and memojis and this emoji and cow emojis and whatever else in there, it just kind of it adds distraction to kids' lives. I don't know if I like that at all. She says, yes, seeing what you do on the phone is important, but it's just as easy to keep your own personal log. I really wanted to see an iPhone SE refresh, but I'm not sure we will. You never know. Perhaps Apple is expecting us to read between the lines. I imagine what you're saying, Rebecca, is that, you know, if they give more power to the older SE, then they don't have to bring out a new one.
Maybe.
Good point. At least I can enjoy the iPhone SE for one more year. Don't give up on me just yet, she says. thanks for that, Rebecca. That's interesting. Okay, let's move on to another email from Luke Sam Soden. He says, hi to everybody. I love my Amazon Echo, and after months of arguing with it, I finally got it to play Tech Talk. But I thought that I would email you to let you know of a great hidden feature that may help someone who struggles with their internet signal. Oh, that'll be Sean then.
That's me. Yeah, I'm interested.
Forever having problems. As a little backstory, I use a company that probably can't be mentioned. But let's call it the place you look up at and is a shade of blue, and live in a very old house, which means that an internet signal is very patchy. Oh, you mean Sky? Right, okay.
I've just got that myself.
I read that email before, and I was like, I don't get that. Now I get it. Right. You're talking about Sky. And actually cuts out in certain parts of the house, which means that I have a few... I have to use a few signal boosters. Well, when playing around with the settings on my Echo a couple of weeks ago, I found that the Echo can also be used as a signal booster by going to the menu within the Alexa app, tapping Alexa devices, and then tapping the Wi-Fi settings. You then just have to follow the on-screen instructions to update the Wi-Fi settings. But when it asks you what network you'd like to join, just tap the very last option that says use as a Wi-Fi hotspot. This means that I've been able to get rid of most of the signal boosters and my Wi-Fi has never been stronger. Wow.
Wow.
Very nice.
I did not know that feature was there. It's been so long since I've gone in to change or edit the wireless or Wi-Fi settings on any of my devices that I'd never noticed this update. That sounds like a really good thing. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, this is definitely a nice little hidden feature that I didn't realize was even there either. I know there are a lot of good Wi-Fi options there, but this one I wasn't aware of. So yeah, Sean, this is something you definitely need to look into.
Oh, yes, I know. I'm wondering, is that in just the Echo itself, or is that in the Dot? Is that in everything?
I'll be checking that out tonight. The Echo? I'm checking that out tonight. I want to know. That is a brilliant little feature if that's the case, because if you've got those things dotted all over the house, a signal boosters, that's brilliant.
Exactly.
He says, keep up the great work. Thanks to Luke Sam Soden, who, by the way, I believe has a great blog as well. You should check out, Google his name and you'll get more on that. Email from Greg from Pennsylvania. Hi, Greg. He says, regarding your discussion of Alexa on Windows laptops. Oh, yeah, we talked about this the other week. Acer have brought out a couple of laptops, and they've got, it's a Spin series, they call it, and they've got Alexa on them. Perhaps you're unaware that Microsoft has recently demonstrated the upcoming Alexa Cortana interface in future Windows 10 updates. This is not the same as Acer building an Alexa device into the laptop, but it is an integration of Alexa with Cortana in all Windows 10 PCs. That's interesting.
Yeah, I did just recently see an article about this where Microsoft announced this partnership with Amazon to do this. And it's interesting because I'm finding recently, honestly, that Cortana is getting some new features. I saw that they recently teamed up with Spotify as well as having iHeartRadio support. And they're trying to make Cortana smarter, I think. Microsoft has finally figured out that they need to do something to get Cortana caught up. But that being said, with them partnering with Amazon to bring Lady A to PCs, I think that that's interesting. I don't know where they're going with this. I don't know if they're going to abandon Cortana at the same time as they're making her smarter. So I don't know where this is going to go, but it is an interesting thing that they're doing.
No, that's a good email, Greg. Thanks for the link. I will definitely check that out. If you think about it, though, they are going in separate directions, because Cortana is more, when I use it, I mean, it's very good for the initial setup of Windows, because you can speak to set up, you know, various settings. and just opening apps and things like that for control of the computer, whereas the Amazon is more for exterior of the system. So they could live together on the system, I think.
Yeah, but I did see a video from Wired earlier today, in fact, and it's basically saying, yeah, it's okay, but it will not let you do anything in the system. You know, for example, if you said open an app on the PC, it wouldn't do that. It's not linked into, it's not integral into the system. It is very much outside the system. You know, what's the time? What's going on? What's the weather? And also there's no visuals, but there's no visuals either. And the reviewer I was listening to said, you know, even if they'd used the Echo Show interface and did it that way, rather than audio only, I mean, we don't maybe mind that so much, but, you know, it does seem a bit odd to not have that in a visual form. If they could have done it, it just seemed a bit piecemeal and not really fully fledged, but it's early days. It's early days for it. Greg also wants to offer two iOS tips that he finds makes life easier, and I would love to hear any other tips listeners have to share. Yeah, we love this. I love hearing new things. With voice over on double tap and... with voice over on, double tap and hold and choose edit. The first is to use the voiceover label feature to change the way voiceover says the names of buttons or apps that it pronounces in a way that's confusing. I've heard of this feature, I've never used it, but that's an interesting one. My second tip is to make use of the text replacement feature to make frequently used text messages easy and quick to use. For example, I use QQ as a shortcut to say, quotes, I'm the blind guy with a white cane, grey beard and a baseball cap. Which he says I often send to Uber or Lyft drivers.
Such a good idea.
Isn't it? He says, I also have shortcuts for my name and address, email address, phone number and other frequently used phrases. Triple letters make great shortcuts because they don't often appear in words. Not sure if that works in Wales. Sorry, Wales. But, you know, you're not wrong. Maybe using text shortcuts deserves a demonstration, he says. So, good. Greg didn't say this in the email, but Sean, that sounds like one for you.
I'll add it to my list, and that's, yes, I use them all the time, and you're absolutely right. They work so well. That's a good one.
Do you use that, Tim? I've never even thought of that feature before.
I use that all the time, actually, for my email address. I haven't used it for my mailing address necessarily, because that usually pre-fills a lot, but my email address, websites, especially things that I use all the time for podcasting and things like that. So, yeah, absolutely great. Use, like you said, two, maybe three characters to do, you know, an email address, so abbreviate something, and then you hit the space bar and it automatically puts in the full thing for you. So yeah, it really works nice.
That is a nice feature. I'm going to start using that. I'm always looking for ways to speed up the process. you know, so that is brilliant. Mohammed Rashid has been on as well. He says, hi guys, I hope you're all well and in the best of health. As an avid listener to your fantastic show every week, I recently was aware on the show that somebody was looking for a solution to talking printers. I have managed to find the following information taken from the AppleViz website, which I hope will prove useful in some way, but however, this may not be a complete solution. Now, Mohammed did very kindly send us a link to a website, which I did read, and that alone is a shock. But I did read it because this one did intrigue me, because I thought, an accessible printer, really? Well, Lexmark... remember them? They used to sell the little cheapy printers you get.
Like,
that's one word for it. But yeah, you get those printers, and they were kind of rubbish, and they would last maybe a few months, and then I would have to in the trash along with everything else. Sorry, Lexmark, but that's true. But they don't.
I'm saying nothing. Well, look,
they don't sell those printers anymore, right? Because they were rubbish. So they don't sell them.
I have a lot I could say about Lexmark printers, but yeah, we don't have the time.
You agree with me, I think. Right, okay. So what they've done is, and this is interesting, they've gone for the pro market, and they sell what they call these MFP printers, the multifunction printers. These are the kind you would find in offices. You know, these big, 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 massive things are like photocopiers, but you've also got, you know, print, scan, fax, all that stuff inside them. These are big, big pro machines that the offices use. And what Lexmark have done is they've obviously decided this is the market they want to go down, quite right as well. But what they've done, which is brilliant, is they've built in accessibility to those printers. So if you work in an office that has a Lexmark printer, perhaps one of those big ones, you might find a headphone jack on it. And it reminds me a little bit of when the talking ATMs came here. You'd plug in an earphone or an earbud to the machine, and voice guidance just kicks up and you put your earbud in, and then suddenly you can use the machine. Everything you tap on the touchscreen is accessible to you. So that's the link, essentially. That was what it was talking about. As Lexmark don't really sell consumer printers anymore, at least none I can find. I don't think I've seen a Lexmark printer for years, consumer level. But this is obviously the market they're now in. I did a couple of Google searches, just random searches. Nothing came up other than the big ones. I think the cheapest one I saw was £450. These are office printers. But I think it's great that they're doing this. I mean, the fact that they've even gone down this route, I kind of now wish they would bring back their cheapy printers because, you know...
With screen reader.
With a screen reader built in. That sounds quite nice.
Well, I've never heard of this before, so yeah, well done to Mohammed there for finding it. I'd never thought this was actually available.
Yeah, I don't remember the order of operations. I know that Lexmark used to be under the banner of IBM, or maybe they got bought by IBM, one of the two, but I don't know if they still are affiliated with them at all. But just the fact that they're doing this in a higher-end office printer is intriguing. This is interesting. It would be worth it, like you said, Stephen, if they did make a consumer printer again. I wouldn't buy it for any other reason except accessibility, quite honestly, but that's all I'll say. But it is nice that they're at least leading the way with this.
I mean, to be fair to them, they've obviously realised what we knew for years, and they've decided to go down the pro route. So good for them. Good on Lexmark. And listen, if they're the only ones bothering with accessibility, I'm behind them. So great. And Mohammed also says, keep up the hard work. As always, many thanks for bringing such a fabulous podcast full of lots of tech tips, which I really enjoy as a tech geek. And this also helps me with my job as an independent living advisor. Warmest regards, Mohammed Rashid. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank
you. Very nice, thank you.
Robert's been in touch. Hi to you all. With regard to web browsing on the Android device, I have a Samsung Galaxy S7, and having tried various web browsers, I have found that Firefox works best for me. Microsoft Edge is not too bad either, but overall there is room for improvement. I also use a Focus 14 Braille display, and while BrailleBack is helpful, that too could be improved. On the subject of poor audio levels from wearing headphones with a Fire tablet, this is indeed a known issue. However, I use Bluetooth headphones and these seem to work fine. Wired headphones, not so good. Keep up the great work from Robert. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's what Billy Burrell, that's a problem he was having, and a Bluetooth headset did fix that problem. So, yeah.
Simon says, I have spent a lot of time configuring equipment to work with Wi-Fi and began to think, what would I do if my router broke? Didn't think those questions, Simon. but he says, I do get worried about it because I'd have to start all over again. I think that this is the answer, though. You plug a Wi-Fi extender into a plug socket, connect it to your router with an Ethernet cable. This plug broadcasts signals around your home using the Earthwire. You then plug in an extender into a plug socket in a different room, and it converts those signals, the power signals, into a Wi-Fi signal. Each plug has its own name and password, but these can be changed using an app on your smart device or your smart device. So your router might be called Sky12345, for example, but the extender could be called Steve's Hotspot. Love it. If you configure your equipment to communicate with Steve's hotspot, then should your router break, all you have to do is plug the Ethernet cable into your new router. Easy. That works.
It does actually work. It works really well. We've done that here in our home because we use the router or router, as we say here. I know.
I knew you were going to say that.
I know incorrectly, but we use that. Americans. We use the one that came with our provider. So our internet provider, you know, they give you the cheapo one that they give you, and then we have an Orbi plugged into that with an Ethernet cable. So right next to it is the Orbi, and then that sends out a signal to another satellite, Orbi that's on another part of the house, so we can get Wi-Fi throughout, and it works really, really well.
Also, another one from Simon. This one's for you, Sean, who has children, he says. He knows too much. Rather than giving them your router's name and password, give them the name and password of the extender that you've plugged into their bedroom. If occasion arises, you can deny them internet access by simply unplugging their Wi-Fi extender.
More than my life's worth.
He says, now, yes, I know that I have broken every EU law by suggesting that children can be denied internet access, as it is their constitutional right to use social media for at least 23 hours a day. I also realise that I am now promoted to the UK's most hated man, but I can live with that. Nevertheless, it is tempting, isn't it, Sean?
It is. And it, you know what? It's a good workaround, and it is a solution. So, I really like that. No, the kids would lock me out. They know far more than I do, so I got to keep on their good side.
You'd have to live in your studio from now on.
Exactly.
One thing I did, which I thought might be quite useful to talk about, and it's something we're going to talk about in future episodes. I know Narina has been in touch a few times. Hello, Narina. I know that we are awful people because we keep saying we're going to get around to making this feature, Sean, about our Wi-Fi extenders. But you know, we have had some issues with them, and we have to sort of eye on those issues out before we tell anyone else about them, so we make sure that it's not the product's problem or indeed our problem. But I got the BT Whole Home Wi-Fi, which is the, you buy it in two, a set of two or a set of three discs that sort of sit around your home. They plug into your router, and essentially they take over the Wi-Fi. Now, you can still use your router's Wi-Fi, but what I did was I bought a TP-Link router, which is, you know, fairly, I researched it a little bit, trying to find the best router for wired connection. So I kind of went down the route of looking at gamers and what they were using, because I knew they'd be using wired tech. So got a router, don't ask me what it was, but I think it's, no, I'd be making it up. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a TP-Link router of some kind. It's a good one. That's all I can say. But what I did was I turned the Wi-Fi on it off and then put my new BT Whole Home Wi-Fi in. Now, the problem is I've got a lot of devices connected to Wi-Fi, and I thought, this is a problem because now I'm changing. I've got to go around every single device and reconnect it. But what I did was I took the old name, they call it the SSID, which means something, I don't know, but that's the name of the Wi-Fi connection. So like Steve's Hotspot, for example. And let's say it was that. Say it was originally called Steve's Hotspot. I would change the name on my new Wi-Fi from my BT Whole Home Wi-Fi, change that to Steve's Hotspot, and use the same password that I had on my old router on the new Wi-Fi. And what that meant was every single device would just automatically connect. So I didn't have to do anything with any other devices. I just could install the Wi-Fi and everything else would just automatically work. And I personally think that's a lot easier than going down the route of starting again when there's no need, really, unless your Wi-Fi has been compromised.
Yeah, and how many devices have you got? It's only when you've got to go around and reconnect them or you think, I've got thousands of devices that need an internet connection. Yeah, now that's a really good idea and it makes it so much simpler.
36 is the answer, by the way.
Oh, wow, have you 36? Wow.
36 things. Because remember, I've got a lot of smart lights, and every single light needs connection.
Of course.
True.
So, you know, that's about eight lights I've got already. So that's just eight just bulbs. It's crazy. Listen, guys, we're out of time. We've got so many more emails to get through. We'll get to them next week. I promise you we'll kick the show off with emails. I think we said that 2 weeks ago as well. But yeah, we will kick the show off next week with emails. And we've also got E3 coming up as well. That's the big games show. I think I'm interested to see if there's anything. We are hearing more about accessibility from games consoles, from Sony, from Nintendo and others, and of course Microsoft with Xbox. So I'm interested to see what comes out of that. But for the meantime, guys, that's it. We are going to do a bit of an extra podcast for you, so stick around if you're on the podcast. Check out the podcast if you haven't already. Search for RNIB Tech Talk, and you'll find that on Audioboom, iTunes, Overcast, Pocket Cast, wherever you find your podcasts, you'll get it there. And we'll catch you again next time on Tech Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.